will cover the top state, national, and international stories of the week in this edition of The Week in Review. From the deal reached on Iran's nuclear program to the Supreme Court deciding to take up another challenge to the Affordable Care Act to Christmas shopping on Thanksgiving and whatever issue you would like to discuss. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can join us by calling 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So were you among those who went shopping on Thanksgiving? We'll talk a little bit about this growing trend of stores opening up on Thanksgiving, Gray Thursday. Are you out there right now during Black Friday? Is there anything wrong with all this? Plus, the Obama administration wanted you to talk about the importance of getting health care, talking about the Affordable Care Act at the Thanksgiving table yesterday. Did you do that? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's welcome our guests. Very happy to have with us on this holiday weekend, Christine Bremer-Moogley, attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau and one of Wisconsin's presidential electors. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
Good. I hope you had a very happy Thanksgiving.
Well, we're celebrating today, actually, but I had a nice quiet Thanksgiving, and today my kids are coming north, so
looking forward
to it.
Well, thanks for joining us on your Thanksgiving. We also have with us Julian Bradley, chairman of the La Crosse County Republican Party and the party's vice chairman of the 3rd Congressional District. He is also a former professional wrestler and a former Democrat. Interesting biography. Hello, Julian.
Hello, good morning. How are you?
Good. I hope you had a nice Thanksgiving.
I did. Thank you very much. You as well.
Well, let's start with Thanksgiving-related topics. There is a growing trend of stores opening on Thanksgiving itself, and there are some that wanted to boycott shopping on Thanksgiving and were mad at the stores who were open on Thanksgiving. And then there were some stores that made a point of saying we're not opening on Thanksgiving. But in any case, apparently there were some pretty big crowds that showed up at some stores in Wisconsin and across the nation on Thanksgiving evening. What are your thoughts on this, Christine? Is that discouraging to you or not?
Yeah, I think it's really discouraging. I didn't shop yesterday, even though it wasn't my real Thanksgiving for me. I didn't even shop online. Of course, I'm in northern Wisconsin, so there's not much shopping up here. But I really believe that, you know, I agree with those who say Thanksgiving is a family time, and when we should be taking time to be thankful by opening all these stores, what we're saying is to consumers, you shouldn't be thankful, you should want more. It really is troubling to me, and it's mostly troubling about the workers that had to work and not have time with their families. There was a thing on the local news up here about a young woman who went out to a Walmart on Thanksgiving Day and was out all day and talked about how much money she saved by buying video games for her kids and had her Thanksgiving dinner in the parking lot with her little girl. And I thought, you know, these messages are so mixed. So I really believe that not helpful to anybody in our country to start opening shopping on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah, there are photos of people camping out days before Best Buy opened at 6 o'clock last night. Well, Julian Bradley, do you see anything wrong with this?
I agree with that. I don't think, you know, there's plenty of time to shop after Thanksgiving. Christmas, the Christmas season isn't for almost a month. It's just unfortunate. I agree with that. That things are opening so early. I heard of Best Buy and Target opening at 6 p.m. yesterday. I certainly didn't go shopping. I'm not going today either. The crowds are a little too much. I value the time with my family and friends more than anything I'm going to save on a purchase of a Blu-ray player. So,
you know what else, Joy? What's interesting is they're saying that it won't even really increase the bottom line. It's just going to change the time frames. A lot of people are shopping online. They aren't expecting much more in terms of bottom line revenue. And there were some reports of stores across the country in the afternoon that were empty, and there were more employees than there were actual customers. So what good have we really done here? You know, it's like we're just honoring this consumerism to such a point that our country's going down the drain, and I wish the leaders of these retail chains would take a look at that and think twice before they ruin things for our country and our culture.
Yeah. Well, another Thanksgiving-related story is that the Obama administration was suggesting that we should talk about the importance of getting health care at the Thanksgiving table yesterday. Julian Bradley, did you have that discussion at your Thanksgiving table?
No, we did not. I wish that, you know, maybe the Obama administration and those that passed the bill would have spent more time talking about it so we could have hashed out some of the many faults and issues that we're having at this time. It's one of those situations where it'd be best to take his own advice. But no, we didn't touch it. We didn't touch on it.
Yeah. Well, Christine, what about just the encouragement that we should talk about the importance of health care over the holidays and at Thanksgiving?
Well, you know, I talk about it all the time. So for me, it's a no-brainer. I agree with Julian that there are some fixes that need to be made. And instead of trying to repeal the bill 44 times, I think the Congress should have, you know, taken some idea on legislation to try to make it good so that all Americans can have health coverage. I don't know who would be against it. And Julian, if you're a former Democrat, you've got to have that in you somewhere. And, you know, with me, I have a 25-year-old who is in school right now and is going to face a birthday soon. And so I talked to her. Sure, I talked to her about enrolling for Obamacare. And I'm a lawyer, and I talk to most of my clients about it. So I think it's really important for all of us. And I agree with the president. This is something we need to talk about. We can't put our head in the sand. We need to have health care for all Americans. So it's a great idea, and he should lead us in this direction.
All right. Julian, what about that?
Well, of course I believe that all Americans should have health care. And I love the idea that we could also keep our doctors and keep our plans that, you know, the president kind of rolled out to us, but that obviously didn't happen. Health care is not a Democrat or a Republican thing. You know, this is a human thing. This is, as individuals, we wish to have health care. If we go out to purchase a product, which health care is, and that's what's important to remember, it's a product that we're purchasing. It's not, you know, one of the inalienable rights. It is a product that we're purchasing. And if we are spending our money to purchase this product, we should have the right and the ability to purchase a certain product that we wish. And the president said that we would be able to do that. Now he's saying, well, no, that's not the case. That's one of the many flaws. Healthcare is important. I'm blessed to have healthcare. And I know there are a lot of people that don't. And, you know, I wish the best for them. And I hope that, you know, their situation can change. But I don't think mandating everyone to have flawed healthcare is going to make everybody healthy.
Oh, that was just exactly what the president was trying to prevent. The people that can't keep their plans, for the most part, are people whose plans did not meet the minimum requirements that, you know, the Congress has said is important. And so what we need to do is to make sure that all people have health care that's meaningful and not just catastrophic coverage, so that, you know, we all together as a nation support each other, and so that we aren't paying the premiums for others through our tax dollars who just decide not to buy it. And you know, when we're talking about your own doctor and your own product, it's, you know, it's a lot more than that, Julian. I mean, people switch doctors all the time, and they go to different doctors, and they get different opinions. And, you know, that's not really that important. What's important is that you have access. And we all, under our Constitution, have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I, for one, believe that the right to be healthy and have access to health care is one of those rights we should have in this country. It's ridiculous, I don't.
It is. I'm sorry. It is something that's important. You're talking about the choice. You're talking about life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and what our founding fathers envisioned. They envisioned choice. And you're talking about the choice not being important. And I couldn't disagree more, and that's... And maybe that's why I'm on the right side of the aisle. Choice is
very
important. It's a big deal to people to be able to choose their doctor and choose their plan.
And that's exactly what the ACA offers. If you go on, when hopefully, God bless us, this website starts working, as soon as the website starts working and the people who have been successful in navigating it have said they have a choice of about 7 or 8 plans, some even 9 plans, with really competitive rates. So the ACA is about choice. It is a Republican-based plan,
and so I can't understand
why you would be against it.
You're still losing your doctor and your plan. If you have a doctor that you liked or you had a plan that you liked, that you chose, that's being taken from you. Not in every instance.
No, that's just not true.
But there
that's
are instances of that happening.
That is not true. You do not, in every case, you do not lose your doctor. That's just absolutely
I did not say
true.
In every case.
That
you,
is a
you
falsehood.
You misheard what I said, and now you're trying to turn it around. You very clearly
you
misheard. I said it's not in every. I specifically said it's not in every instance. But there are cases of it happening.
This is Lively, and we have a caller who wants to share a story about a lively discussion at his Thanksgiving Day table. Clarence in Watertown, go ahead.
Good morning. Yes, after Thanksgiving dinner, we were all kind of sitting around. And my wife mentioned that I had donated money to the Republican Party of Wisconsin. Of course, my brother-in-law and brother and sister, who are big union members, jumped, you know, what did you do? And then we got into health care, and we took a little different turn. It seems that the prices that the doctors and dentists and hospitals, the prices they charge are almost predatory, that you don't get to know what it's going to cost till you get the bill and then see what is covered and what is not covered. And I have sleep apnea, so I wear one of these stupid masks and a little machine. And the company that supplied it billed me $127 for this tiny little mask and a little piece of hose. And, you know, you could probably get something a lot closer than that, you know, for $15 somewhere. And I don't understand why we're going on part of this, but not examining why we are charged what we're charged.
Clarence, thanks. Christine, what is it about the Affordable Care Act that will make our health care more affordable?
Well, I think Clarence makes an excellent point. I've experienced the exact same thing in my life and with my clients. And I think that one of the things we have to look at is the opportunity of the states individually under the ACA to regulate and to try to set rates. And if we look at the difference between Minnesota, which very aggressively worked towards setting rates and to regulate medical costs, the premiums are very much different in Minnesota than they are here, much lower than in Wisconsin, because Minnesota actually took the bull by its horns, opened its own exchanges, have its own navigators, and have a very successful plan. And the costs in Minnesota are much less than the costs here for the most part. So I think that you're right. There are the rates that we're getting charged, we don't know what we're getting charged. I went in for an x-ray and it cost me thousands of dollars for some tests that I didn't even know it was going to cost me. You're exactly, and you know, this is something I do for a living is healthcare. So I know that this is wrong. But I think the government has an opportunity under the ACA to work with various managed plans and to regulate. And they haven't done it in Wisconsin. They have in Minnesota, and there's been a huge difference for its people.
Would have been better if Wisconsin had taken that federal money and set up its own exchanges, Julian?
I don't know that it would have been better. What we're talking about is the government running health care, and I don't think it's the government's responsibility. At its core, it's not the government's responsibility to do that.
We're gonna take a short break, and we'll continue talking about some health care-related issues in the news this week during this edition of The Week in Review. Lots of other news to get to as well. And whatever issue you would like to talk about, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Talking with Julian Bradley, he is the chairman of the La Crosse County Republican Party, and Christine Bremer-Moogley. She is one of Wisconsin's presidential electors and an attorney with Bremer and Trollope law offices in Wausau. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking today with two guests from different political perspectives and welcoming your input on the news of the week at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guests today are Christine Bremer-Moogley and Julian Bradley. And let's take another caller. Royce in Madison is with us next. Hello, Royce.
Good morning. As you all know, the legislature is going into special session next week on what to do about Medicaid in view of what's happened, I guess, since the 1st of October. And I guess my question is there any possibility that they're going to look at expanding the Medicaid program? Because in the upper Midwest, we're all out there by ourselves, except for Indiana. And we've already heard comments on how Minnesota's doing a better job than we are in Wisconsin.
Thank you very much, Royce. Yeah, there is a special session of the state legislature next week. The governor called it because he wants to extend the deadline for Wisconsin Badger Care recipients who were going to be knocked off of the Badger Care rolls and told to get their health insurance through federal exchanges. But because of the problems with the website, the governor says we should delay that by 3 months. Christine Bremer-Moogley, I guess Royce wants to know if, is there any chance that Wisconsin would change its mind on these on the federal money?
Well, I think that's a great question, Royce. And one of the things that's I know is that the progressives in our state legislature are going to fight like crazy to do something for people that are going to be knocked off the rolls. You got to remember, though, under the Obamacare, people were eligible for subsidies if they were earning just 133% of the poverty line. That meant a person, a single person who earned $15,000 would be eligible for subsidies and would be eligible to be under the Obamacare. But for a family, it was $31,000, a family of four. But what Walker did was he said, no, we're not going to have it that high. We're going to lower it to 100% of the poverty line. So that cut almost between about 90,000 people off of the opportunity to have the Medicaid in Wisconsin. And so, you know, and many, many tens of thousands of children. And so now, because of the difficulties with Obamacare, they've put it off for a while. And I don't know if it's going to help people or not. But the fact is that even if you're at the 100% of the poverty line and you're put onto the Obamacare and you're supposed to buy through the exchanges, these people can't afford it. And they likely won't buy it. And so it's not going to do much good for people. And I agree that the people up north and in central Wisconsin, the rural communities that are impoverished, will not be benefited by this. And so the effect of this, where Walker says he loves the people of Wisconsin and wants to help them become self-sufficient, he doesn't understand that these people have jobs and they can barely make it as it is. And helping them onto the exchanges to buy health care without the aid of Badger Care is going to take them out of health care. And it's tragic. And if he loves the people of Wisconsin like he says he does, he should do more for them than that.
What do you say, Julian Bradley?
More people will be eligible, actually, by lowering the cap. And from what I understand, more people will be insured under the governor's original plan than are currently insured. You can't question that the governor cares about the people of the state of Wisconsin. I think that's irresponsible. He ran for governor and, well, has now been elected twice, thanks to the recall, because he cares about the people of Wisconsin. He's calling a special session of the legislature because he cares about the people of Wisconsin. This health care issue is big. Rather than waiting until next year to tackle it, the governor's calling a special session so that we can come up with the best thing for the people of Wisconsin. And that's what we trust the governor, the assembly, and the Senate to do. And I'm very hopeful that they certainly will.
Well, it wouldn't have been the best thing for the people of Wisconsin to turn away millions and millions of dollars in monies from the federal government that other states are taking in Wisconsin's place, so that the money that would have come to Wisconsin from the taxpayer money that we are all spending is going to other states because the governor decided, because it was politically advantageous to him, to turn it back. And the fact of that is it hurts the people of Wisconsin because, sending 92,000 people off of Badger Care and sending them letters saying they're going to be cut while he's at a fundraiser in New York doesn't show a lot of caring for the people of Wisconsin. So I guess I disagree with you in that regard. And I think someone who was really caring about the people wouldn't turn back this money, which is very, very crucial to their health and their happiness. You know, I sit across the table from families every week, many, many times, who tell me that their health care is ridiculously expensive and they don't know what they're going to do. So I really think that this is not good for the people of Wisconsin. I hope and I pray that the special session brings some more relief. But I'm afraid that with majorities as they sit right now and with the governor in place, we won't be able to do much than what's already in place.
We have another caller.
Talk about federal money. We start talking about the federal strings that are attached as well. It's very important to remember that. Also, it's important to remember the money lasts for 3 years. Then what? Then Wisconsin has a responsibility, and the governor and the legislature have a responsibility to take care of the people, not just today, but tomorrow. We have to stop being short-sighted and putting a Band-Aid on a much larger problem. And that's what the governor's trying to do. That's why he's calling the special session. And I'm very confident that something very good will come out of that.
Let me get another caller in. Stephen Appleton, what did you want to say, Steve?
Yeah, good morning. Good topic. My comment is this. I work for a company who just told us during our open enrollment that our spouses are no longer going to be covered under our health care insurance thanks to the Affordable Health Care Act. So my question is, you guys are talking about the affordability of health care. How is that for families now who their spouses have to take on their own health care plan when I work, my spouse works, and we both have to contribute to our own separate plan as opposed to having one family plan? And
all right. I'm sorry, Steve. Christine, is this a big problem?
Well, I think the problem was that in order to make it fair for all, some employers were saying that if your spouse has insurance, we won't buy insurance for you. So that, for instance, if I have an employee in my office whose spouse has insurance and they come to me and say, well, I don't need insurance, then I don't buy it for them. And so the other employer takes most of the responsibility. And, you know, those are things that it's an issue of fairness and it's an issue of making certain that all people and all employers take some responsibility for making certain that their employees have health care. So I understand the problem. It's an economic problem. And, you know, I know some family plans are better, but I think that was the point behind it, to make certain that this responsibility is something that's shared all the way across the board. I just want to say one other thing, Joy, if I could quickly, about Julian said that this money for ACA from the federal government ends in 3 years. That's absolutely not true. They get the money now. It'll be cut after 10 years down to 90% from the federal government. But certainly the federal government continues to support the states in funding this program.
Do you want to add to that, Julian?
Well, I'd like to answer the question first, because I think it's very important. This is a real situation. This is happening, and she was talking about fairness. It's about fairness, and I just don't see how it's fair that he's got to change his coverage now, and his wife has to go shopping, and now they're spending more. You know, this Affordable Care Act, and you know, we're talking about earlier, it was, well, it's going to be more affordable, it's going to be more affordable, yet this family is spending more. That's not fair. That is not fairness. And back to the other situation. Okay, maybe it's not 3 full years, but in 3 years, in 10 years when it is cut, that's still less money that's coming in. And that's my point. We need to look at something, and we need to come up with something that's got a long-term vision. We can't just put a Band-Aid on a giant cut. We need to try to heal that. And just forcing people to have health care is not going to make everything better.
There's two cases challenging part of the Affordable Care Act are headed for the Supreme Court this week. The Supreme Court agreed to hear these two cases involving the requirement to provide coverage for some forms of contraception and companies who say it violates their religious beliefs. The White House says that it believes the Supreme Court will agree that this mandate is lawful and essential to women's health. Well, Attorney Christine, how do you predict this playing out?
Well, you know, I think that in light of our current reality of Citizens United and the Supreme Court making a decision in the wake of, you know, what they've decided on other things, I think this could be problematic for our country. The question really is, do corporations have the right to religious liberty? Do corporations have a right to make a statement in this regard? If the court goes along with this, I believe it's a radical revision of our First Amendment. Citizens United, as we all remember, said corporations have the rights of persons with regard to political campaigns. And so it's the question is, using that as a base to jump from, is it therefore all right to exercise religious beliefs? And is a religious expression the same as a political expression? And that's what the Court of Appeals decided in Denver. So, you know, our government, the Solicitor General of the United States, has said, no, a not-for-profit corporation a for-profit corporation is not a religious organization, and it cannot say how the government should operate. It would be like saying, well, I joined the Quaker religion, therefore I'm not going to allow any of my taxes to go to fund wars. I mean, it's the same argument that's already been litigated. So I think this is a very interesting issue. The question is whether the civil rights of women to make their own decisions with regard to what their birth control should be is something that their employer should do, or whether the woman has a right to make this decision with her physician. You know, it's about whether, Hobby Lobby should, and its 13,000 employees should be told, you can use this birth control but not that. And that's really what it comes down to. Do they have the right to dictate that? And that's what the Supreme Court will be asked to decide.
Do you think Hobby Lobby should be able to dictate that, Julian?
I think it still comes down to the choice of health care plans. And that's where I think the foundation goes to. This is something that is very specific. It is very specific. We're really drilling down into, and the owners of Hobby Lobby are saying that this violates, you know, their religious freedom. What it really boils down to is, does the government have the right to come in and tell you that everybody has to have health insurance? It's very, very basic, and it's very foundational. This is yet another instance of where the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, is failing. These are things that were not considered, and if they were considered, they were just thrown out the window without thinking of the ramifications for business owners that may feel as such. I think it's important for all of these things to be ironed out, and the Supreme Court will do so.
You know, it's much larger than that, Julian. When you're dealing with the Supreme Court in an issue like this, you can talk about it being narrow, but it isn't narrow. It really goes to the right of a for-profit corporation to tell the government which laws it will follow and which laws it won't on the basis of religious freedom. And I think that's an extremely dangerous, slippery slope we're going down. And if you say, well, this only is about the Affordable Care Act, you just aren't understanding the law of precedent under the United States Constitution and our law. So, you know, this is very dangerous. Does a for-profit corporation have the right to dictate which laws it will follow and which laws it won't? And do we, taking it a little bit further, does a for-profit corporation have a right to dictate a woman's health care choices? And that's what's going to be before the Supreme Court. And I think we should all be following this. It's very, very crucial.
We need to probably move on to some other issues since we are trying to touch on the top state, national, and international news of the week during This Week in Review. More happened this week than health care issues. Let's talk next about this international issue. President Obama is pushing back at critics of an interim nuclear deal that the U.S. and other world powers has struck with Iran. The president says the U.S. cannot close the door to diplomacy or rule out peaceful solutions to the world's problems. The president said on Monday that America's commitment to peace and diplomacy is what makes the nation a beacon to the world. Some U.S. lawmakers are criticizing this deal because they say it is too soft on Iran. Israel and other U.S. allies are also expressing some major doubts. Julian Bradley, is this deal that was struck with Iran over its nuclear program a good deal or a bad deal?
I think it's a bad deal. We're looking at the potential still, which still remains, of a nuclear Iran. That is not something that we want. And 6 months is great, but what then? This goes back to my point on healthcare. What then? We have to think long term. We can't just think short term. I will say I agree with the president. We do need to come up with peaceful solutions. But, you know, looking at 6 months and the safety and security of some of our allies and our strongest partnerships, including Israel, I don't think it's safe to, you know, put them in any jeopardy just to hammer out something for 6 months.
The deal that was announced on Sunday would curb Iran's nuclear activities for 6 months in exchange for limited relief from economic sanctions. So, Christine, is this a big deal or not?
Well, I think, you know, I think that it's going to be something that's going to be difficult. You know, I think Secretary of State Kerry has said that this is interim only. It's the start of a plan to lead to a comprehensive deal. And it's supposed to lock in place the nuclear activities that could bring Iran to actually have a bomb. And it's going to prevent them from constructing new centrifuges and require that they convert some of their stock to make certain that the stock that has been enriched to 20% is converted to a less usable form. So I think that they are trying to start a process that's going to end this time bomb we're sitting on in the Middle East. And I pray that it's good. I agree with Julian, and I certainly support the president that you know, this is something we need to do. The question is, can it be verified? Is it transparent? Can we hold them accountable? They don't have a very good track record, and so I think it's something everybody's worried about. But I sure give them credit for trying, and let's see what happens. It's interim. Let's give them a chance to go forward.
We're going to move to another issue. Mike in Madison is going to raise that issue for us. Hello, Mike.
Hi. I'd like to raise the issue, which I think is also very real and involves fairness, and that is the IPCC, which is the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, met for the last 2 weeks and concluded on Sunday. It's COP19 meeting in Poland, and despite 700 people walking out of the meeting, they accomplished essentially nothing toward reducing world greenhouse gases and compensating for losses such as what occurred in the Philippines recently and Hurricane Sandy, as well as African famine and drought, which is linked to global warming. And because of this, we're headed in a very dangerous direction because the scientists are saying the effects of greenhouse gases are going to increase faster than what they previously thought. So for 2 years now, we do nothing because that's when the next meeting is.
All right, Mike, I'm sorry. What about that? We'll start with Julian Bradley. Mike's concerned that nothing is going to be done to reduce global greenhouse gases, and that's going to hurt us all. Your thoughts on that?
I think the environment is something that's very important, and it's very crucial that we look at. Again, this isn't just a Democratic or a Republican thing, and a lot of people like to paint the Republican Party as anti-environmental, but if you look at our history, you would find Republicans of the past would be shocked at that accusation. It is very important, and I think it should be stressed that these groups need to come together more and continue working with not just each other as scientists to determine what the effects are going to be and what we can do, but also work with their legislators to really identify what role the government can have in trying to positively affect our environment. I mean, I've been saying over and over again, we need to stop being short-sighted, and we need to have a bigger vision, and the environment certainly plays into that.
Christine?
I agree that it's something that we aren't paying anywhere close to enough attention on, and the fact that the Congress sits idle right now, knowing these threats to the world and our people are sitting there is just a travesty. You know, we're looking at issues of food scarcity. We're looking at issues of horrific climate disasters like the one we just saw in the Philippines. And yet we sit and do nothing. And so I think it's absolutely right to raise this, and we should be raising it, and we should be talking about it. And if we don't, it's going to be too late. And I really pray that our leaders start taking good note of what's going on with our climate, because it's right before our eyes right now.
Coming up on the Week in Review, we will talk about some other top issues in the news this week, including a new push for comprehensive immigration reform. We'll talk a little bit about the so-called knockout game that's getting a lot of media attention this week, and more as our Week in Review continues here on the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, and it's time now for the Week in Review quiz. President Obama continued the Thanksgiving tradition of pardoning a turkey this week. He actually pardoned two of them. And like last year, he let Americans decide in an online vote which one should get the official title. Well, here's what the winner had to say ahead of his victory. So today's Week in Review question, what is that gobbler's name? 1-800-642-1234. What is the gobbler's name that was officially pardoned this week by President Obama? 1-800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. We will give you the next 5 minutes to call in your guess or email your guess, and we will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers and announce the winner and the answer at the end of the show. The winner will be given a choice of books that we have featured on the program recently. Again, this is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with two guests from different political perspectives. We are talking with Julian Bradley, chairman of the La Crosse County Republican Party, and Christine Bremer-Moogley, who is an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau. President Obama was on the road in San Francisco this week, and he was calling on Congress to pass comprehensive immigration reform. We also talked to U.S. Representative Mark Pocan on this program this week. He has sponsored an immigration reform bill. Let's start with Christine this time. Is comprehensive immigration reform, does it have a chance with this Congress?
I think that if the bill was allowed to be brought up for a vote, it would pass right away. Speaker Boehner isn't going to bring it up. I think the president really wants legislation. He doesn't want to just use his executive powers to ease laws on deportation. And as we know, his administration has been extremely aggressive with regard to deportations of undocumented workers. I think the statistic was 1.5 million or something people have been deported. And so he received a heckler, and he had a conversation with that heckler, and he said, "No, I agree with you, but I don't have the power to do it." People have questioned whether he does have the power, and that he has used it in certain instances and not in others. And so now he's saying he really wants Congress to act, and I credit Congressman Pocan for his imagination and his work in bringing this forward. And I really hope that he can pass it. I mean, the people of America. I think the polling is like 63% polled favor legislation to grant citizenship to these 11 million undocumented workers. So I hope that a bill can, with tighter enforcement and improved flow of new immigrants and some of the things that we want, legalization for those living here, I hope that goes forward. And I really hope that Congressman Pocan, who seems to have a great deal of talent in Congress, a new star for us, can get something going.
Well, Julian Bradley, do you think comprehensive immigration reform should pass Congress?
What I think is we have a situation of a lot of confusion in the White House. First, the president has the power to do this, then he's not sure if he does, and he tells the heckler that he doesn't have the power, and now he's saying, well, I want Congress to do it. I think he needs to determine, you know, what it is exactly that he's looking for. He is the president. You know, there is a Democratic Senate and a Democratic president. So regardless of what will pass through the House, it still has to pass the Senate, and the president has to sign it in. He's the president. He sets the vision. I think he needs to do that, decide what it is he can do, what it is he can't do, And then, you know, something can get through the House potentially and then onto the Senate. That's how the process works.
No, the process works because Congress is supposed to pass laws and he's supposed to sign them. I mean, he has been very clear with regard to what he wants. And the interesting thing about it is even though he has used his executive powers to let the children of undocumented workers stay here and not be deported because they've come here not of any fault of their own, there is now going to be hearings in the House to determine if he's overstepped his executive powers to do that. So, you know, we've got one side saying use more of your executive powers, and the other side is having hearings to determine if he's violated the Constitution by overstepping his executive powers. He's kind of in a catch-22 position there, as he has been for many, many years, for all of his years as he's been in the White House with the Congress being so divided. But I hope that the bill that Representative Pocan has put forward can get some real steam and we can get something done.
Let's talk about the so-called knockout game. New York City police say one man was arrested and charged with assault as a hate crime after a 24-year-old says he was punched in the face. Police are investigating whether this was a part of the so-called knockout game, where apparently this is happening in some communities around the nation. The object is to knock out an unsuspecting person with one punch. And in any case, I wanted to ask Julian Bradley if is this something we all ought to be worried about? We had a guest on this week who said that the media is hyping this you know, too much.
I think it's a valid concern for everybody involved. I'd like to just quickly go back, I'm sorry, to what we were talking about earlier.
Very briefly.
I promise it'll be very brief. But we're talking about precedent as well. You know, that's what you were talking about earlier with the Supreme Court ruling. And I think it's important to remember that as well as far as executive powers. But as far as knockout goes, it's dangerous. It's a horrible, dangerous game. I don't think it's being blown up. There are multiple people that are being affected. As a black man myself, as someone that looks younger than I am, I don't want people looking at me any more, you know, fearful because they're afraid of something that may happen. And that's starting to happen. I think it's important to get the message out there that this game is not embraced by any community, and that, you know, the police and our authorities are going to do everything within their power to ensure that this just, you know, it gets taken care of.
We have in Wisconsin Representative Dean Cofford, a Republican from Neenah, calling on state prosecutors and law enforcement to vigorously and swiftly prosecute and punish instances of people involved in the so-called knockout attacks in Wisconsin. He was mulling whether special legislation might be needed to cover this. So what do you think, Julian?
I don't know if any extra special legislation is necessary for this, but I think what Representative was doing by getting this out there is telling anybody that may hear and may, you know, start thinking about participating in this that there are further consequences to think about. And that's what's not happening, is people aren't thinking of the consequences of their actions. And this will strengthen those consequences. And if it passes, it does pass, and it will obviously strengthen. It'll be better for the community in general. You can't have thugs of any kind running around just randomly punching people. That's not a civilized society.
Christine?
Well, I agree with Julian, but knockout games aren't new. We've seen this, you know, I remember growing up in Chicago, knockout game was common then. My worry would be that some of the right-wing pundits are trying to make this into kind of a racial thing, and I would assume that we should all be very, very worried about that, and that shouldn't happen. You know, I was reading last night, the knockout, there was a chef from New York that was just knocked out in Philadelphia, and he broke all his jaw and his teeth, his wired shut, 3 hours of surgery. I mean, serious injuries can come from these stupid games. You know, five-year-olds are getting hit by teenage girls. I mean, it's just ridiculously stupid. I just hope it doesn't become racial. I certainly don't like a racial epithet against young teens walking in groups together. And I don't believe we need, I agree with Julian, I don't believe we need new laws. I think we need to enforce the laws that we have. And we need good parenting and good neighborhood watch to make certain these kids, if they are identified, they're brought in.
That was a serious accusation of some right-wing racism, too. Let's try not to do that. I mean, I've been on the speaking tour of Shattering Stereotypes, trying to talk about this. You know, I'm a black Republican. We exist. And it's just not true that the far right or any subsect of the right wing is racist. And I just need to clear that up. I'm sorry.
Well, I agree with you. I don't think they are either, Julian. But, I mean, when I was doing my research, I saw that Sean Hannity was labeling this with black youth. And I don't think that's fair. And I don't think it's right.
We will be talking with Republican State Representative Dean Coffert on getting tough on these cases on Monday State Capitol Report at 7 o'clock. After 7:30, then on our State Capitol Report, we will talk with Democratic State Senator Tim Carpenter, who will make the case for drunken driving to be taken up during next week's special legislative session, when the special session deals with the Badger Care issue. Senator Carpenter wants Governor Walker to include three drunk driving bills that recently passed the Assembly to be taken up. Is that, Christine, something you think ought to happen, that we should get tough on drunk driving and pass these bills in that special session?
Absolutely. You know, as a personal injury lawyer and someone who sees the effect of the harm and the horrible effects of drunk driving on people, I don't think we can act soon enough, so I hope that this is taken up. It sounds like it won't be. I don't know why not. It should be, and I think this is a scourge on our society in Wisconsin. We should do everything we can to prevent these injuries and deaths.
Mm-hmm. Julian?
The bill that passed the Assembly had wide bipartisan support. I anticipate that it will pass through the Senate and eventually be signed by the governor. At least I would hope so. But the special session is on health care. That's a very pressing incident that needs to be covered immediately. So I suspect that that will be what the special session is about. But I would hope next session that is taken care of.
Well, let me, I think it's time for us to reveal the winner and the answer of the Week in Review quiz. Congratulations to Neil from Wisconsin Rapids. He is the winner of the Week in Review quiz. We asked, what is the gobbler's name that was pardoned officially by President Obama this week? The answer is Popcorn. Popcorn and his companion Carmel were raised together on a farm in Badger, Minnesota. And according to the White House blog, when Popcorn is feeling peckish, he can't stop snacking on his namesake corn, so thus the name Popcorn. And he has been known to strut around to the song Halo by Beyonce. All right. The two Popcorn and Carmel will be on display at Mount Vernon, and they'll permanently reside at Morven Park's Turkey Hill in Virginia. So good for Popcorn and for Carmel. I did read somewhere that the presidential pardon of a turkey is the dumbest tradition we have. Do you think it's dumb, Christine?
Oh yeah, because then they go and eat one. So I think, you know, what's the point? I have 10 turkeys in my yard in Rib Mountain. Very often, whole families of turkeys walking down the road. So we live with turkeys up here. And, you know, they have these big, giant white turkeys, and then they pardon them and put them somewhere in a farm. I don't know. I think it's kind of silly. They have other things that are more important to do, but well, I guess it's all in the
sake of
fun.
Yeah, and we're almost, you can hear Halo in the background. We're going to leave it. Julian Bradley, I wish we had time for your thoughts on turkey pardons, but we're out of time. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you so much, and happy Thanksgiving, Christine, for your official
day. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.